Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello, I'm Alan Cumming, and welcome to My Shelves. My shelves are sort of a museum of my life. I like to keep things from my travels that are, to me anyway, the very essence of the experiences I've had. Sort of portals, if you will, to a specific time and place. And the inspiration for stories and memories and musings. Here's one of my favourite pictures. I found it in the attic of a flat I used to live in London. And what it is a sort of a sepia sketch of a little Boy Scout, a little sort of camp little Boy Scout who's got his hand on his hip and one leg kind of at a jaunty, you know, slightly showgirl kind of angle. And he's looking over his shoulder, and over his shoulder, touching his shoulder, is Jesus. For some reason. I have no idea either. Here's a harmonica. I've always meant to learn to play it. And I never have. And today I'm talking to the lovely Kirsty Wark.
And there was some big story about something that was happening in Lebanon. I can't remember what it was. And this guy was right beside me, and I turned around to speak to him about it. And he seemed quite knowledgeable. We did the interview, and I said, thanks very much. He said, oh, I was on to talk about the new M25 extension.
Welcome, bienvenue, welcome.
Kirsty Wark is a Scottish journalist, television presenter, now novelist, and she's best known for hosting BBC Two's Newsnight, which she's done since 1993. The item from my shelves that I'm talking to Kirsty Wark about today is this. Can you hear it? It's a little cassette, an audio cassette box with a cassette in it. And on that cassette is a recording of a show. The show was called Scones and Tea with V&B. And it went out on Radio Scotland in 1988. Now, Scones and Tea with V&B was a show that I co-hosted with my friend Forbes Masson in our alter egos, Victor and Barry. And what we did was we went to various famous people. Went to Kirsty, went to Ian Hislop, who was the editor of Private Eye. We went to the politician, David Steele, and to the actor and presenter, Nicholas Parsons, and they had to pretend that they had been members of Victor and Barry's Amateur Musical Society, the Kelvin Side Young People's Amateur Dramatic Arts Society in the past, and that we had, you know, obviously launched them on their road to stardom. So we went to Kirsty's house in Glasgow, Forbes and I, in 1988, and for some reason we did the interview on Kirsty's bed, the three of us sitting on her bed, and it was very funny, and she was a hoot, and you know, I think she's just great, and we've been friends ever since. Thanks for doing this, Kirsty. It's so nice of you.
Not at all. So funny. I listened to Victor and Barry again. Oh my God, you were about 10.
Well, you must have been about 12 then.
No, 1988. What was I? I was 30, I think.
Were you really? It's so funny. Because I've got this little cassette box. That's the item that I'm talking about. The little cassette. That with it. Because you know what happened was that it was sort of uncovered. It's like sort of, you know, it's like the Mormons. We found the cassettes of Victor and Barry, the lost materials, in a sort of a trove. And amongst them were these interviews that we did. And it's so crazy because I, you know, that was what, 1988? That's 30 blah, blah years ago. I have a very slim grasp on most of what happened there in that time. So it's actually amazing to hear yourself and be reminded of what went on. What are your memories of that auspicious night?
I can remember because what programme was it on Radio Scotland then? What programme was on? Because I knew all about Victor and Barry.
Well, Victor and Barry had been doing things on TV and various things for a while.
Yes.
And this was a series called Scones and Tea with V&B.
With Victor and Barry, yes.
And so it was you, David Steele, Ian Hislop and Nicholas Parsons. We did
their first four, but what program? Because they were only like 10 minutes. So what did they go out on?
Something on Radio Scotland.
Yeah,
Radio Scotland.
Victor and Barry were well known then. I mean, but the funny thing is, we don't want to get ahead of ourselves here, but what I find very funny listening back to it is how much like Stanley Baxter you sound. It's like you're channeling Stanley Baxter. Like, I don't know if you ever saw Stanley Baxter as a kid at the Panto.
Oh, of course. Oh, not at the Panto, but on TV.
But you knew, but obviously, and apparently I'm at Glasgow. Yeah. So, you know, we had that. And Dad was in Stanley's class at school.
Was he really?
Yeah, they were whole head together. Oh, they were whole head.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I mean, I adore Stanley, and I just I feel that Victor and Barry were definitely sort of, you know,
even the music you were using was kind of music hall typey music that you used.
Exactly.
In Victor and Barry.
Yeah, the incidental music of that show was all kind of like gramophony, kind of funny old gramophone records. And there's the Victor and Barry were sort of had such an inbuilt nostalgia thing. It's funny, Forbes and I were working on a project, a Victor and Barry project, actually, right now.
Good.
And it's so interesting to sort of realise we are very nostalgic about it because it's going to be, this is what we're working on, spoiler alert, but next year will be Victor and Barry's 40th anniversary, like the 40th anniversary since we made them up. I know, it's just insane. So it's interesting to think that we were nostalgic even when we were doing them at the time, even when we were like 19, there was this sort of nostalgia and this wistfulness and a sort of thing about Glasgow, actually, that was, you know, it was at that time in the late 80s when Glasgow was changing but I think it's always like that. There's always this sort of divide of the kind of, you know, no mean city sort of Glasgow and then the kind of more refined arty.
But also arty, and things were happening then and, you know, clubs were closing down, but clubs were opening up. There was all sorts of, there's quite a lot of change in Glasgow. And then artists were also starting to inhabit spaces that were empty, you know, like they then had done before in New York and then went on to do in Berlin.
Right.
So there's all that Wasp studio, there was the Tron, all that stuff.
And all that school, like Wisniewski and that sort of
Adrian Wisniewski and Alison Watt.
Yeah.
And
Alison
Peter Watt.
Oh, love her.
Yeah. Love Alison. And Alison didn't want to be entire. She went out with Adrian Wisniewski for ages, but she didn't really. She's been very much overshadowed by the new Glasgow boys. That's, you know, what that's the whole Glasgow Miracle, Glasgow School of Art thing. Really, Alison was not part of that. Her artwork, though, is done. I think her art is just phenomenal. I went to her degree show. Bridget McCann bought a head at the degree show, one of Alison's own paintings of her head. I should have bought it as well.
Wow.
It's a beautiful piece.
So it's interesting. We're being nostalgic about Glasgow.
We're being nostalgic already. There's lots to be nostalgic about.
I know. When we came to your house, because the joke in this episode on this cassette is that I don't know how it ended up, but we ended up sitting on your bed. And that's how the joke
got. Was that before Paula Yates did the bed? Why did we do the bed?
It's 1980. I don't know when. I don't know. It was something about sound or something.
Yes,
I can't remember.
Maybe that's what it was.
And it was just better if we sat on the bed. But it was, now I sometimes say in Two Truths and a Lie, I said I've been in bed with Kirsty Wark as one of my truths. What do you remember of that? I mean, I remember, like, at the time you were on Left, Right and Centre, this political programme in Scotland.
And Breakfast Time.
And Breakfast Time. And it's so funny because I'd forgotten that you were on Breakfast Time. And that must have been... Did you take over from Frank Boff?
I luckily was not on with Frank Boff. Have we started, by the way?
Yes, no. We started.
Oh, yeah, have we? Started. I thought we were just chatting.
Well, that's the thing. We're just chatting. Who started, Kirsty? This is what you do when you're a top international journalist. You see, you have to make the interviewees so relaxed. They don't realize you started.
I was on Breakfast, and I went down to Breakfast because Sally Magnusson was having one of her endless children, and she was in maternity leave, and I went down there and filled in for her. Then she came back, and I just stayed. I think I must just have been like the cuckoo. I wouldn't go. Frank Boff had left by then, I think, or else I was never on with Frank Boff and his terrible jumpers.
And he And that's what we talk about endlessly in the in this 10 minutes thing. Cardigans,
endless,
and things
like endless cardigans, endless cardigans.
And it was so crazy because Frank Pope was like, everyone's, the nation's uncle, he wore all these cardigans. And then it was like he was doing coke with prostitutes. And that was what was his
sort of...
There
was some big scandal, but he was, I think he was away by then. Well, he's certainly away in his head by then. But he was away by then, I think.
That wasn't what made him leave Breakfast Time?
I don't know, you know, I can't even remember. But then, you know, I can remember Breakfast was a bit wild then, because I remember when Jeremy and I did it together, and in the morning if
Jeremy
you got
Paxman.
Bored. Yeah, if you got bored, what we did was we had this game we played where we sort of said go, and then under the table we were each trying to write down all the states of America as fast as possible to see who would win, just to keep ourselves entertained.
God. Oh my God, geek alert. Oh my God, Kirsty, that's hilarious.
Well, I mean, it was just fun. And the other thing I can remember...
Is this while you're on live TV?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you're... Yeah.
Hilarious.
Yeah. And I can remember, this is actually literally true. People came on and off the set really, really quickly. And so you were kind of wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. Who are you interviewing? Did you know exactly who you were interviewing? And there was some big story about something that was happening in Lebanon. I can't remember what it was. And this guy was right beside me, and I turned around to speak to him about it. And he seemed quite knowledgeable. We did the interview, and I said, thanks very much. He said, oh, I was on to talk about the new M25 extension. And it was like, you know, he was so game. He was so game. He just, you know, spouted out a little of what he knew. God. I mean, it probably wouldn't happen now, but that was pretty Wild West. Just to go back to the Victor and Barry for a minute, what was so enjoyable about that was it was almost like it was kind of hand-knitted. We just did it, much like this podcast.
Totally. Much like it, yes. Something's never changed, Kirsty. Do you know what's so hilarious is that Forbes and I have been talking a lot recently about just what was so crazy was that, you know, when you do something and it's just, you're just being daft and you're probably inebriated or stoned when you made up most of it. We were students at the start of it, you know. And then all of a sudden it becomes a real thing and it's like your real job and people are taking you seriously and you're kind of, you know, it's big thing, big TV shows and things. It felt like, you know, the Emperor's New Clothes or something. It felt like really... And the thing for me was that when our album came out and it was on the news, I thought that was terrible. I just thought we shouldn't be on the news because of our album. And it was that sort of funny.
So it was a quiet news day in Scotland.
Yeah, it was. I think it was. But it was like, and finally, you know, that bit. But,
yeah, yeah.
But I think that I really love the hand knitted part of it. What's so funny is that a lot of the gags that, you know, a lot of the doing Victor and Barry and doing that, you know, on the spot stuff. And it, when I listened to our interview, I was like rolling with laughter because some of it is so hilarious. And you, Missy, are hilarious as well. Some of your comebacks. Really, well, who knew, Kirsty?
Well, I don't know. But I mean, it's so fun. Actually, the one thing, I mean, we've talked about this before, but the one thing I think you really have to push harder for is to get the high life back. I adored it.
Well, you know what was going to happen? That was 25 years last year or something. And actually, it was when the new BBC Scotland channel had started, and they approached us and said, oh, you know, it's 25 years. Do you want, and we were sort of said, oh, that'd be kind of fun. We could do a sort of a sort of like a documentary, but do a little scene, shoot a new scene from it. But then they didn't have any money.
Nobody's got any money these days.
Nobody's got any money.
Except Netflix.
That's right. And they didn't want us. But, the thing, you know, a lot of the lines, a lot of the stuff that we did as Victor and Barry served us so well as actors.
It really did. It really did.
Yeah, because it's like soliloquies in Shakespeare are basically stand-up comedy routines.
Yeah.
Well, stand-up routines, maybe not so much comedy sometimes. But that lack of a fourth wall and that lack of fear about engaging with an audience is, I think, really defined both Forbes and I.
Yes, and I think also that idea that it was a kind of, not this kind of 3D experience, but you had the tinkling of the cup. You had the bedspread. Yeah. You had all that. It was all part of the program. It was lovely. In that sense, it was almost like a drama, but it wasn't. It had a great intimacy as well. And you and Forbes created this great intimacy where everybody just felt safe chatting away about what they wanted to chat about. And so much of television and radio is so closely manufactured.
Exactly.
That it's so nice not to have that.
I love that. That's what I love about that's what I actually really like about podcasting is that there's more license just to sort of ramble off into whatever you want to. Do you know what I mean? I think that's sort of, aside from those investigative ones, you know, but when it's just as one person like me talking to you, I think I used to hate podcasts. I just felt like, because I had to do so many of them and I just felt like everybody had a podcast. But now I think what's really nice is that it's like going back to the days of radio. I'm doing like plays and things and, you know, a lot of drama things that are going to be podcasts. It's like the old days when I used to do plays for Radio Scotland and Radio 4. Mm-hmm. So I like it.
In a way, I think radio is a great medium for drama because it allows the imagination to roam so fast. Whereas in television drama, unless it's it's very difficult in television to do a slow-paced drama. You need fast-paced drama all the time. Slow-paced drama is trickier in television.
I want to talk about you more, Kirsty Wark, because at that I want to go back to that time. So you were doing Left, Right and Centre.
Yes.
And then were you doing Left, Right and Centre first and then you got asked to do Breakfast?
I was doing Left, Right and Centre and then I got asked to do Breakfast. And then after that, I had a great spell where I got asked if I would go and do The Late Show, which was unbelievably, remember, a nightly, hour-long art show on the BBC. Who knew?
I know. Imagine.
It was amazing. And so that was a tremendous experience. And then I did that. I remember flying to London when I was 36 weeks pregnant. You know, you're not really meant to fly after 28 weeks. But I was so determined not to have the baby born in London. I flew back after I did every Late Show. I did that till I was 36 weeks pregnant, then carried on doing that. And then actually after James was born, which was quite quick succession, I went to Newsnight, where I still am after all these years.
It's crazy.
Which is partly enjoyable, but partly horrifying.
That's life though, isn't it?
Isn't it? I mean, it doesn't feel like I'm doing the same job because it's absolutely different every day. It's like you being an actor.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you're not doing the same thing every day.
No. But was there a spell then when you were just an arts correspondent, when you were on The Late Show?
No, I was always doing the Scottish politics stuff.
So you're always doing
the Left,
Right and Centre.
Politics and art. I mean,
that's so
lucky to have been able to do this.
You really are.
It's been very unusual to be able to enjoy, because I mean, my view is, and I'm sure this is yours too, is that if you're interested in, you know, politics and current affairs, you're interested in arts and vice versa. There isn't some kind of strange wall between people that are only interested in one thing, not the other. You know, it's just a kind of general curiosity and engagement with creativity. And that can take loads and loads of forms. You're writing novels now, aren't you? I'm writing novels.
Yeah.
You're writing memoir. I'm not writing a memoir.
You know, you've not got a memoir. Oh, your memoir would be fantastic.
I can't remember it.
Well, but it's all, I mean, there's so much of it must be, you could get in the BBC archives in terms of
the
people
could,
in your work life.
Yes, I'll think about that one.
Do you know one thing that in my extensive research for this show was I was trying to find the famous Margaret Thatcher interview with you and I just can't find it anywhere. Because I just think it's so fascinating and so much about gender politics as well as politics and Scottish-English politics as well. Can you just tell us a wee bit of the background about that? Because it really was a big landmark thing for you, wasn't it?
It was. And basically, people had not been voting for Margaret Thatcher in Scotland even after she introduced the council house sale. She couldn't understand it, what was going wrong, what wasn't connecting. So the idea was she was going to have this big charm offensive in Scotland. And, you know, the BBC said I was going to interview her. And then suddenly Downing Street asked a few more questions just before she was about to arrive. And it dawned on them that I was doing the interview. And they said, no, Mrs. Thatcher does not want to be interviewed by Kirsty Wark. And the BBC, too,
because you were a woman.
Because I was a woman. And she'd only ever been interviewed by Miriam Stoppard over a, I don't know what that was, and the woman of the sinking in the Belgrano. I think that was about her only two interviews with women. She didn't like being interviewed by women. Anyway, BBC stuck to the guns and said, okay, no interview then.
That's great, isn't it?
Great.
That was great.
George
BBC
Sinclair,
Scotland.
That was great. Absolutely.
Bravo to him.
Bravo. And So it was a kind of very frosty encounter. She was trying to, in makeup, we were sitting back to back with each other, I think it was. And she was trying to get all this feminist business. She obviously knew I was a feminist. And she was obviously trying to soften me up to try and talk about women's issues. And I knew that I had half an hour to do this interview and there was a lot to get through. And I'd done a lot of brainstorming with people and we just kicked off.
Wait, can we just go back? You're in makeup, getting your makeup on with Margaret Thatcher behind you, and she's trying she's talking to you about feminism.
Yes, well, she's saying, oh, it's difficult for women, kind of thing. And uh-huh. I wasn't really having any of that. So
wow.
that wasn't going to work very well. So I think what, I mean, it's called the one, well, I call it the 1-2 question, which is my first question, which, what would the answer be, which was, do you understand why you're so unpopular in Scotland?
Ooh.
Which is either, yes, I do understand, so therefore, why the hell are you so? Or I don't understand, so why don't you understand? So that was the kind of 1-2 that...
Right.
And she was kind of, she's taken aback. And the interview just kind of careened on from then.
What did she say?
Then, she said, well, actually, our policies... I think people in Scotland really like it when I come, and they always come to greet me, and they're very, very friendly, and they're buying their council houses. And so it went on. And then the problem was, though, that she had two, both Malcolm Rifkind and Michael Forsyth, who were two senior Tories, and Michael Forsyth was very close to at the time, and she was being prepped before the interview, and make more connection with Scotland, Margaret, make more connection. And then she started saying, we in Scotland. Now, we in
that's
Scotland
right.
for you. And a book's actually been called We in Scotland because it was so bizarre. I thought she'd just misspoken. And then she kept saying it. And and I think I was almost overly calm. I'd prepared very well. But the reason I was overly calm was I wasn't going to get het up because Alan and my doctor were the only two people that knew I was pregnant. I was
what?
In very
oh, so
early stages
of
my pregnancy
of
with Caitlin, who was born on November 6th. This was in April. And nobody knew.
God.
So I thought, I am not going to get myself in a state because actually
of course.
This baby is more important than Margaret Thatcher.
Wow. Wow.
Hello there. This is my friend Joe.
Hi.
Now, Joe plays rugby for England.
Yeah, what's your point? Come on.
Well, Joe presents a podcast and it's my firm belief that you should listen to it.
Very interesting.
And here's why. Because it's not actually a rugby podcast because, well, let's face it, there's billions of them already.
No, 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 no. It's about you, the listener, and the jobs you do. If you're a teacher, an astronaut, a tree surgeon or a chef, then we've got loads of questions for you.
The Joe Marler Show. Because... everyone is interesting if you ask the right questions.
That's a great line. That is a very good line from you, Tom.
Thank you, Joe. You want to find it? Search for The Joe Marler Show in your podcast app.
Because everyone is interesting if you ask the right questions.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I saw one little moment from it in a reel of stuff, an interview you did at BAFTA, and you are very calm. But gosh, that's so interesting to know that's the reason. But then the thing was, hadn't something happened that day in Parliament on a vote and she didn't know about it?
She didn't know about it. It was the 1922 committee had met and she didn't know about it. And she said, well, I don't think you're right. And I just came in with the names really fast of the two people that had censured her. And then that was what kind of derailed her a bit.
Did she?
I mean,
get
it's not
mean?
That you go. You don't go into an interview to get. You don't go into an interview to derail people, but you're prepared. You expect them to be prepared. And afterwards, she just berated me. Just came after me. And we stepped off.
What
the
did
set.
She say?
She said, "I have never been interrupted by anyone as much as you've interrupted me. Outrageous! Outrageous!" I just smiled. And that was it.
That's so great. So great. And was she pissed off at Michael Forsyth and Malcolm Rifkin?
Well, I think they had their head in their hands at the side of the set during it because of this business of we in Scotland and not, you know. And it was a time of great difficulty in Scotland. Obviously, or you remember all the Ravenscraig, you know, stuff and everything and jobs
going.
All
the closing
and
of factories,
it was
yeah.
Very, very difficult. Very difficult at the turn of the late 1990s. And she just didn't seem to understand that. She just had no... And, you know, we were talking about everybody trying to save industry in Scotland. George Unger. Lots of Conservatives were working cross-party to try and save stuff, and she wasn't having any of it.
Wow. Did you ever interview her again?
No. Never. Never.
Hilarious.
She did not cross my path.
I bet. Gosh, how exciting. You're like a little... What would that be like? You're sort of like the what's that word when people are scared of you and you...
Oh, I don't know, a witch? I don't know if you know this. I performed this at midnight at the Borders Book Festival a couple of years ago. It's my favourite short story. It's a Robert Louis Stevenson short story called Thrawn Janet. You must read it. It is wonderful. And it's very much about Calvinism, Presbyterianism and witches. And it's fantastic. That's my tip for afternoon reading for you.
Thank you, in my quarantine. Do you know, it's funny, thrawn, for people who don't know, is
thrawn
a Scottish
word.
Such a good word. It means like kind of mean and gnarly and kind of bitter, doesn't it? That's sort of the general.
And stubborn, really. And do you know what's so good? The late Donald Dewar, who was a friend and you knew him as well, would do things in Parliament if he was on his feet to try and confuse the stenographers. So what he would do is he would throw Scots words in. So I try and do that to Newsnight. I've used thrawn, I've used stramash, a terrible stramash. And sometimes
great.
They get kept in. Sometimes it's like, oh, I don't know if anyone's going to understand what that is. But I said, but they understand by the even nature of the way it's spoken what it is.
Totally, it's very onomatopoeic.
It's an expressive language. And I've just finished recording a four-part Radio 4 series in Scottish literature, which is, and it's our friend Douglas is in there and all sorts
Douglas,
of people from
Booker
the past.
Winner.
Douglas, Booker winner, and all sorts of people. And this idea that you've got Scots, you know, in Scotland language is so, you've got Scots, you've got Doric, you've got Gaelic, and you've got different vernaculars all over the place. And it's
for such a tiny
rich
country.
Language for such a tiny country.
I know.
I mean,
it's
where
amazing,
you're from, people speak differently, don't they? I mean, you know,
totally.
Country folk where you're speak
yeah, when I came to drama school in Glasgow, people thought I was posh because I was from the East Coast. It was so interesting. And also just like how class is a different, it's a different sort of class, like where I came from, it's kind of like feudal system. I mean, I grew up on a country estate, so it's a very different sort of thing. So it was really, you know, and that's, it's so funny. I always think about this, like when I went to drama school, I left home and I was going to the big, but I'd only gone to Glasgow for the first time to go to audition.
Oh God, that audition.
Yeah, I was leaving home. I was going away to Glasgow to the big bad city. And it was like, an hour and a half drive. Now I do double that just to go to my place in the Catskills from New York.
Absolutely.
Do you know what I mean? Think nothing of it. It's so funny, just distance.
I know.
I wanted to go back to Thrawn because
you know
Eleanor Braun, the amazing actress?
Yes.
When I played Hamlet, she played my mum. She played Gertrude and we became friends and she's so lovely. And she, I think her dad was Scottish. I think that's right. She had a Scottish connection anyway. And she loved, you know, she loves words. And so she loved the word thrawn. And I always called her Thrawn Braun, right? Because that was a funny thing. And I said, can I just call you Thrawn, Eleanor? Can that just be my pet name for you? And she just went, no. And she was like, not having it at all. So Margaret Thatcher tried to sort of play mind games with you in makeup.
Yes.
I didn't quite think of the fact that you get makeup with the guests before the
Well, that was in Glasgow. I think in London, in the BBC in London, it would have different makeup rooms probably. Or actually in Newsnight, that's not true. In Newsnight, they come and sit in the same room. Not that we have new makeup just now. We haven't had makeup for a year and a half.
But did you sometimes are in makeup with the people that you're going to then go on and
yes.
grill? Yes. And do people play mind games ever? Other people aside from Mrs. Thatcher?
Only once, and that was Portillo. And that was the only time actually I had a broadcasting complaint upheld against me. I had a slightly bad-tempered interview with Michael Portillo. I'd come back to work too quickly after my father had died, and then 3 weeks later, my mum's wonderful sister, my godmother, died, and I came back 2 weeks after that. Big mistake. And, of course, that the viewer doesn't know that, nor should the viewer know that. But I realised that he said to me, he was a bit snippy in makeup. I was, he says you tonight. I thought, oh God, And then we went in, and I remember he used this word, and it's such a male to female word. He said, "Stop hectoring me," and I thought, no woman uses that but a man. Men only use that about women.
Yeah.
And I probably did go in too hard actually, but. There's a broadcasting complaint upheld against me. And actually, he's a much nicer man now. He's not a politician. But
What was he at that point? What was his position?
He, I think, was he Armed Forces Minister or something? It was something like that. I can't remember. I think he was Armed Forces Minister.
And you said but that. So what happens when you get a complaint upheld against you? What does mean?
That's just the BBC doesn't like that kind of headline in the newspaper, if it is indeed a headline. But that, I think it's quite extraordinary. That's the only one I've had upheld against me. And that was almost 30 years ago.
Right, right.
Because by and
but you
large,
don't get fined or anything?
No. Sent to the back of the class, no. But I do think that encounters are... They can be. Is this balance of getting light and heat really? And I think they are probably more. You're looking for more light, but a bit of heat doesn't harm.
That's good. I love that. You introduced me or reintroduced me to something that I just absolutely love, and it's the London to Scotland sleeper train.
I
remember doing that years and years ago, and then for decades I would just always either fly straight to Scotland or. Fly to London and then get a plane up. And you said, no, Alan, no. And I've been doing this when the world was normal. I fly to London, get a day flight to London, get around about 8 o'clock, get a taxi to Euston and get the overnight sleeper. And I just, it's
north.
One of the most, all it's the way you can go. It's very split. You go to Glasgow. You're going to go. Last time I did it, I got from Inverness all the way to London. And it was
wonderful.
Of course, the new swanky on suites.
I love the new one. And the food's better and everything's lovely. Yeah. But you can get, and what's really lovely about it, so say you get a day flight and you get an eight, you can go and have dinner with friends then get on the train.
Yes.
That's what's so great, or go to the theatre.
So the thing about you is that you've stayed in Glasgow all the time. Even all these years when you've been doing Newsnight and all these shows, you've continued to go up and down like that. And I
am the
love
world's
that.
Most regular commuter. I just never wanted to. I mean, look, I love London. I adore London. I love going out to the theatre. I love going out and see friends. I love going out for breakfast. That's my big thing. But I'm here. I prefer to stay in Scotland. I mean, that's always the way it's been. And I went down when I was a producer years and years ago, and I went down to work in the World at One. I stayed in Earl's Court for 9 months and loved it. And I remember then they kept offering me a job to stay on The World at One as a permanent producer. And I thought, no, because if I stay here, I'll never come back. Years and years and years ago, people just emigrated and that was it. But if you have a reasonable amount of money, as we have now, is that, we're people that are very rooted in Scotland, but don't have to be here all the time. I think that you're rooted in America too, because obviously, maybe it's New York, maybe it's the Catskills. I don't know which is more important to you. But... I think this idea that you just don't go and stay away. That's the point. If you'd been doing this 50, 60, 70 years ago, you would have probably just come back to Scotland occasionally. You probably wouldn't have worked in Scotland. And now
You can come, but there's really exciting things to come back and do as well. And I think, the way that our world is, it's easier to maintain a presence and a life in both places. It's I find that really interesting too. And just, I feel it's so funny. Like every morning I come down and ask Alexa to play BBC Radio Scotland And that I feel so connected to just hearing those voices and hearing the news bulletins about stuff. Mm-hmm. And so when I speak to my mum and she goes, "You'll never guess what's happening," I'm going, "I know."
Yeah, connecting.
Connecting. It's all about connecting. I've got that tattooed on my arm, you know. Only connect.
Connect.
Okay, this last little bit I'm going to play you is the end of my conversation with Kirsty. But what happened was I was doing two in a row. I was doing Kirsty and then another Scottish legend, Lulu, the fabulous singer. But Lulu came on a little bit too early. Kirsty and I were still talking. So you'll hear this weird sort of echoey stuff and then you'll hear another Scottish voice. That's Lulu. I just thought I'd leave it in because it was so hilarious. I've loved interviewing you, probing you mercilessly.
A great way to start my week.
As it were.
Yeah.
See what you did there. Thanks so much for doing this and
having a little thing's happening again.
Is that Lulu? Lulu.
Lulu. I'm waiting in line for my turn. But obviously over keen, I'll piss off and you can finish.
Hilarious. All right, Kirsty, lots of love to you and
lots of love and see you in the summer.
I'll see you in the summer and thanks so much.
Bye, darling. Bye.
Take care. Bye. Well, I'm putting that little audio cassette box back on my shelves. I hope you've enjoyed listening to me and Kirsty, and I hope you'll join me next time for another trip down memory lane in Alan Cumming's shelves. Alan Cumming's Shelves is hosted by me, Alan Cumming, and produced by the lovely Jack Claremont. We are part of the Acast Creator Network and the Crowd Network too. We just love networks. Another Crowd Network podcast to check out is Unaccountable. It's a podcast fighting for police accountability in the United States. It's a podcast that tells the stories of innocent people who've been killed by the police, just like George Floyd, but also people like Mohamed Muhaimin, Shacey House, and Carrie Illich. And so many more you haven't heard about, but you really should have. The stories can be difficult to listen to, but this could be the most important podcast you'll ever hear. It's a podcast fighting for change, and we need to join that fight. Just search for Unaccountable in your podcast app now.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.